You're hearing voices.
Oh, when I met her, she was such a sweet, innocent little girl.
Then they mentioned the name group and guitar, and I went crazy.
From NPR, this is Hearing Voices with fans and bands, groupies, gravediggers, and rock and roll singers.
I like long hair.
I love long hair,
and where are you going to find it except in a group? And the cutest boys are in a group.
And they're most experienced.
So that's it. Groupie.
Expressions of Enthusiasm by Music Mavens. From the memories of former children to the cemeteries of deceased music stars.
How do you want to die? How do you want to be remembered? Or do you want to be remembered at all? Do you want to have people come and visit your grave and light cigarettes and pour bottles of whiskey down there? Or do you want to be forgotten?
From on stage to backstage, to the grave and beyond.
Dun, 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 dun.
This is Fans dun, and dun, Bands dun, from dun, Hearing dun, Voices.
Dun, 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 dun. Oh, there you go, baby.
From NPR,
what?
You are hearing voices. Our show this week is Fans and Bands, groupies, gravediggers, and rock and roll singers. I'm Ian Svenonius, a member of the group Weird War.
Why do guys like girls like that?
I wish she asked me.
I don't know.
Hearing Voices, the best of public radio. Supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. This hour, we'll hear stories of music's often profound influence on its enthusiasts, from fans who tend their heroes' graves to Bo Diddley blowing up his mom's radio. But first, we'll hear from people who engage in one of the most notorious rituals of fandom.
Yeah, it was the same girls but with different boys.
Like these girls from producer Alan Lorber's 1969 album, The Groupies.
Rock geishas.
Every night.
Rock geishas.
Every night.
So I just want to make peas and leave.
So I just want to make peas and leave.
I didn't want to get stuck in that house.
Groupies. They are the subject of books, films, and after-dinner banter. Groupies are a key part of rock and roll's cultural mythology. But the question remains, who are they?
There are groups all over the place.
Where did they come from?
And for every guy in a group, there are any number of chicks.
And do they actually exist?
I'm a groupie. It's a full-time job.
It's a full-time thing because you have to be out till 4 and 5 in the morning.
And it's groovy, I guess.
To understand the origin of the groupie, one must understand the origin of the modern group. Until the Second World War, people playing music together were called bands. After the war, the bands became known as groups. A group was a musical combo, performing under names like The Shadows or The Shantays, in homage to the street gangs that terrorized society through the Industrial Revolution. As the name changed from band to group, so did the meaning of music. No longer was music just a soundtrack to an evening or a device for dancing.
My stereo man is my number one high.
The Cold War, the alienation of suburban living, and the development of a mass media elevated musical groups to the status of cultural leaders, central to personal identity in a way they'd never been before.
Prince Charming, who plays fabulous guitar.
The group's new status resulted in the idea of groupies, women who seek to sleep with guys based purely on their membership in a group.
All this anti-establishment has led to an establishment of its own, with its own groupies, with its own leaders.
Initially, groupies didn't really exist. As groups got more esoteric and effeminate in the late 1960s, though, with longer and longer hair and weirder affectations, the music industry was intent on the sexualization and particularly the heterosexualization of their very androgynous workforce. The record-buying public was typically not inner-city hipsters or campus radicals, but the same suburbanite teenagers who played on the basketball team and worked at the hardware store after school. Thus, groupies were invented, or rather, aggressively suggested by the music industry.
The pop stars know that they are getting a commodity, because a groupie is a commodity. I mean, it is bought for and paid for, not in cash, but in identity.
Groupies were supposed to be absolutely compliant, willing to give themselves sexually without compunction or expectation, a teenage boy's centerfold fantasy.
To every group, there's like 20 chicks, and everyone's jumping them, and each chick wants to be around. Right, and the way to do that is by being the freakiest.
The groupie myth caught the imagination of real girls, possibly because of women's very limited role in the boys' club environment of rock and roll, particularly after the Beatles' invasion. You'll never know how much
I really love you. The Beatles really started it, like the Beatles started everything
else. As soon as the
else.
English groups came out.
And it's the influx of English groups that really had that excitement and where the chicks were really flipping out, screaming for the Beatles, screaming for the Stones, this and that, sneaking up to hotel rooms. Do you promise not to tell? Whoa, whoa, closer. Let me whisper in your ear. Say the words you long to hear. I'm in love with you.
The Beatles had the effeminate hairdos, the jewelry, uniforms, and street gang social structure we associate with groups. As the Beatles projected boyishness, a female ideal of waif-like girlhood took hold. Twiggy, Mia Farrow, and Marianne Faithfull were the it girls of the era. Girls with skinny legs, bangs, and eyes eternally wide with wonder. Since these ideals of womanhood looked like they were 16, 60s girls attempted to look and act like infants.
These old groupies are really gross.
Ugly, they're ugly and gross.
How can you do that when you're 25?
Eros was, for them, a transaction, a means to an end in a world where a female's only asset was her willingness to utilize her sexuality.
To keep the guys interested, I mean, you can't just be crummy because they'll sleep with you and then, you know, throw you out. They don't care
very
much.
You have to have a riff. A gimmick.
You gotta have your gimmick. Whether it's sexual, vocal, or whatever, you gotta have something.
As with modern pornography, groupieism was more about power and narcissism. Asserting oneself was the point of the game, similar to the one the majority of the bands were involved in as well.
Nobody'd go there if the girls weren't there, because the girls make the whole scene, right?
Yeah, groups just go there to pick up girls.
You know, these girls make the place.
Groupieism quickly took on a life of its own, with its own culture and mores, an expression of will by fangirls, the theretofore voiceless components of the principal pastime of the day, rock and roll. All stand by, let the people see.
Joplin, there's a pop star, there's a groupie herself, Poxy, the chocolate layer, Cynthia Plaster, Karen Stern, super, everybody's in a group now, nowadays, it's the only thing to be, I guess.
Well, I started going down to the Village when I was about 14 or 15. I'd go there every single night, and I'd take drugs, every drug. If it was there, I took it, and we'd go to this place called Figaro's. So after school in the afternoon, we'd go down there, and they played records, and that was a big thing. You'd go down there and dance, and everybody had long hair, and I started really getting hung up with people with long hair.
I started
getting bored of the Village, and we heard about this discotheque called the Cheetah that just opened. So we went there, and we hustled our way in so we could get in for free every night. And every night, it was only 10 blocks from my house, and every night my friend and I, we'd go there. And every 2 weeks, they changed groups. And every 2 weeks, we had a new boyfriend from that group. And then we started going to different discotheques.
You were just like me.
Ondine's. When the Doors were there.
Stone,
and Rolling Stone.
20s.
With the Vagrants were there.
That's
and the Bittersweet.
Ungano's, Harlow's.
And it was always the groups. The that everything was centered around
that's
the groups.
That's the only reason I'd go to these places, just for the groups. I wouldn't go for the regular boys.
Oh, when I met her, she was such a sweet, innocent little girl.
I was so sweet. But then they mentioned the name group, and a boy, and guitar, and I went crazy.
You really corrupted me. I wasn't that bad before you. I brought her down there, and she sees all these groups, and then she started running at them. And that's all she talks about. She'd come home, tell me about this group and that group, and how cute this one was, and how cute that one was.
They are cute.
So, of course, I had to go see for myself, and I'd end up arguing with her about it. It's all your fault. When I first started going to the Cheetah, there was a lot of girls that were making piggies with the group. But I was 15, and my girlfriend and I, and we said we'd never do that, we'd never be like that.
I said it, too.
But, you know, months went by, and we'd get more and more into the whole sex scene. And just when I was about 16, 17, I said, this is it, I don't want to be a virgin anymore. I went downtown to a doctor that I heard of, and I got birth control pills. And I started taking the pills, and I said, well, how am I going to go about this? You know, I have to find somebody. And the first person I met, he was in a group, and he's at the sea, and he said, come back. And that was it. And after that, the rest was easy. I had the pills. What did I have to lose? Nothing.
You're right. Yeah, it's groovy.
And then there were boys, and they were cute, and it was safe.
I'm a groupie.
It's a full-time,
job. Thing because you have to be out till 4 and 5 in the morning.
I don't just run after a group because they're in a group. I run after because I like him. I think he's cute. I'm attracted
to him.
You're
attracted to him sexually.
Yeah, isn't that it?
He's got a nice body. He's thin. He's wearing velvet pants.
Yeah, I like the way he sings. I like the way he moves.
Long hair.
Well, isn't that the way
you like? And the hair attracts you. When you look at somebody, you look at their hair.
Well, I wouldn't go out with anybody with short hair.
Of course not.
I couldn't. I really couldn't. But isn't that the way with any
woman? She doesn't look at the face. She looks at the body.
Oh, I look at the face.
You look at the body, too.
Yeah. I only pick the cutest. I don't... If they're, you know, that could be the biggest group in the world.
Would you consider yourself a groupie? Would you, though?
Well, say I have all the characteristics of one.
There are two different kind of groupies, you know. Well, there are actually three. Then there's just the chicks.
They're the really slaggy groupies, you know, the ones who will just...
It doesn't matter.
Really,
if you play an instrument, it's cool.
Right. You could play a guitar in Washington Square, you know, and they
and
dig
that's
you.
Groovy.
And then there are the very sophisticated ones.
Beautiful, beautiful chicks who found this is a much easier way to live.
And they only will take the pop stars. I mean, the really super pop stars. Like if someone's just in a, you know, a second-rate group,
and
that doesn't
count.
And a lot
of them get truly involved with these guys because a lot of them are, I mean, the music business is a creative field, and they get honestly hung up on guys in the business.
But it's not just because they're in a group. It's because I think they're cute and because I like them. And they don't understand that all the people I know are musicians, are connected with music.
All my life. That's
or work in studios and that. That's all I know is people that have something to do with music.
So I remember when I met you, that's like you were already into all that already. And you'd gotten me into that phase.
Because music is my whole life. I took singing lessons, guitar lessons, dancing lessons, tap dancing lessons.
Yeah,
I tried to learn
mine.
How to play the drums. I took piano lessons. I revolve around music and the people associated with it. And that means all the cute boys. So if that makes me a groupie, then I am a groupie.
You're a groupie, yes, but you're a super groupie.
Yeah.
You're not a regular groupie.
I don't run after them.
No, they run it. She's sought after.
Particular.
A super groupie is a girl who's very choosy.
Yeah, she wants the cute one. She wants the one
wants
she's
the
attracted
to. Top name groups.
No, not necessarily. She doesn't want the name. She wants the person.
But she does want to get somebody that's
big. I guess
big.
It depends on the person.
It does.
But they're the sought after ones.
They're
and they
the
get taken
ones.
On
super
trips and fed and things are bought for them. And songs are written about
songs
them.
Songs are written about them. Look at the advantages a groupie gets, you know?
She gets to go anywhere
she gets to
in
go
the world.
Anywhere in the world. She gets all these boys all fucking over her, paying for her.
Those poor groups,
I'll
and they
tell
go
you,
anywhere except
New York
for New
and
York.
California have the prettiest groupies.
In London, it's the groupies there and the groups there are much stranger than they are here. I think they've influenced the groupies here, you know, because most of the American groups I've met are much straighter than the English groups. The English groups are really freaked out. And there's a whole bunch of groupies that revolve around English groups as well. You see, there's groupies now who like anything. There's groupies who specialize in English groups. There's groupies who specialize in guitar players, in drummers. I mean, they've each got their own little thing that they like.
Most of them, they travel in pairs.
In pairs, right, in pairs or in threes.
Or in threes.
Walking around and they see through dresses with size 95D.
sticking through.
Nobody wears underwear. Nobody wears bras. The English groups come over here, and they're so pure and good, and they get dosed up with the clap. They all do.
No, when I was in London, there was an article in the paper that there was an epidemic of gonorrhea going around.
I had it. I got really bad.
Mm.
And after that, I was afraid of boys. Oh, I got creamies.
I had
first boy I was ever with. Mm. And my mother put me in the hospital, and I didn't even know the last name of the boy to tell the doctor. Mm. At least the doctor said to me, you know, did you at least like the boy? After that, I was afraid of going with boys. I really was.
For a week.
For about a week. I saw him again.
What else is there to do? Sit home and watch television?
It's boring.
There's nothing. Nobody goes on dates anymore. They go to the movies.
They just go home with boys.
Everything's music now, and music is groups.
Music is everything.
And groups are cute.
I don't think there's one group in New York that hasn't come in that I haven't met. I mean, it's getting to a point where I want something different.
You want a doctor.
I want something different. I want to take it easy and let things ride.
I want to join the Peace Corps.
You cater to them and you wash their clothes. I washed his underwear and his this, and I took care of him. Not because I cared.
Everyone's always over their house, you know, eating, sleeping over, whatever. That's the only way they can hold
having their laundry done.
Yeah.
And they were groovy for the night, and then we would kick them out the next morning.
Mm. Yeah, that's the hard part, deciding what to do with them the next day.
Yeah, you don't want to be with them.
Yeah, because you have things to do, or you want to go somewhere.
I've got better things to do than be with them.
Mm. You have to feed them.
They'd have like 20 chicks living with them. Each one would have a harem with their babies.
What's a teenage boy's dream?
Right. But it's such a weird thing. And all these chicks would be so happy. They'd be like sisters. You know, everyone would be cooking big things. You know, and who's taking a turn sleeping with Peter tonight? These chicks really believe that they're going to meet their, you know, great Prince Charming, who plays fabulous guitar. And he's going to take them away and marry him. And it's really a drag because these cats don't think that way.
Like, we get depressed, so we'll take downs. And it escapes.
Or ups.
When you're downs or ups, you don't care. He could be a boy right there, and you could really, really dig him, and you just wouldn't care at that moment. You'd be just so messed up that you just want to just fling on everybody.
And his jump
and
on
you wouldn't
him.
Know if somebody took your blouse off.
Just there.
I took so many, I almost killed myself. That's because of stupid groups. Can't believe it. I did things like that.
But they all take drugs. I mean, if you go home with a group, that's
they're
the first thing they do.
They
the grass
you,
comes out.
They tell you they love you, and they tell you this and that just to get, you know, to do what they want. A lot of them do that. They say words that they don't really mean.
Mm-hmm. I mean, especially the more chicks they ball, the more jaded they become, and in turn ask more of the chicks they're with.
They treat girls like a lot of them. You know, they think they can take advantage of the girl and have her there when they want her and play and be able to go away and be with other girls and, you know, take advantage.
Well, if you're going to lead this kind of a life,
you've
sort of like a groupie
it.
Life, you have to
accept
go
it.
Out with it in mind that, you know, don't take anything seriously.
You see them walk out the door, you know they're going home with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, the next night they come back and, like, try to get another girl. They try to get it's like trying on shoes.
They just have no respect for them at all. You know,
occasionally you'll find two people that are chemically attracted or would be attracted even if this
right,
guy
no
wasn't
what.
With this group and this chick wasn't into what she's into. But the chances, the odds against that happening, because of the attitude, everybody's stoned, nobody gives a shit. These guys are making so much bread, it doesn't matter what they do. They could have a hit record today and they all know that what the hell are they going to be doing in 2 years anyway? You know, they'll be back at IBM school in Newark.
Because they all know why the chicks like them and it's very hard to form an attachment when you know that someone's looking at you outwardly first.
It's fun just to go home with them, have a goof for the night, and the next day, you know, you meet other people.
Yeah, until you're ready
young.
To get married.
Yeah, you're young.
What if we got to lose?
I don't want to get married
get a
now.
Few diseases.
With one
that's
person
all.
The whole rest of my life right now. I've got at least another 6 years before I get married. Yeah. I'm having too much fun. I realized it last night.
Mm-hmm.
I was having too much fun last
night. Yeah, what happens if you get married? Everything's over. I never have problems getting money. There's always somebody who likes to give me a few dollars, pay my phone bill, take me out to eat, and buy me a stamp. There's a lot of men around just dying to give girls money. For nothing, you know. Come out to eat with me. They just want a pretty girl as their friend. And they really do. And I don't know what I'd do without them. Eventually, I'm going to get married, and I guess it'll have to be a normal life. How many people have funny lives after they get married? But having musicians are really going to marry virgins. Where are they going to find him?
There's group, it's group, it's in your head.
On one block.
It's addicting, really. Once you start, you can't stop.
There's a bunch of dodos around. That's the only people you can really communicate. That I like long hair.
I love
and
long hair,
and where are you
going
to find it except in a group? And the cutest boys are in a group.
And they're most experienced.
So that's it. Groupie.
Of course.
There's so much money.
In our little establishment, in our little establishment.
I mean, that's, you know, that's a cool thing to do, man, to have some pop star baby.
Mentally. Mentally.
She went from one bed to the other.
You notice how whenever you go back and slay at night, you always get to watch Late Late Show.
We didn't do anything. We didn't do anything, really. I wouldn't do it.
I mean, there's four of them.
Everybody's in a group now, nowadays.
It's the only thing to be. It's the only thing to be, I guess.
Well, I'm not planning to get married for a long time.
I'm not either. I've got my life to live. I've got more chasing to do and more running around. And
so I'll any cute boy I see, I'll make piggies with them.
Of course you will. She's young.
So if that makes me a groupie, then I'm a groupie.
Once there was a young girl who was a good time fun girl, and she went through her younger life a singing.
Excerpts from their 1969 album, The Groupies. Copyright Iris Properties New York Incorporated. The producer, Alan Lorber, started his musical career in the early 60s working with people like Neil Sedaka, Jackie Wilson, and the Lovin' Spoonful, and continues today running the Iris Music Group Records label and recording with the 21st Century Orchestra. The Groupies, complete documentary is available at irismusicgroup.com, Amazon, and iTunes. This song you're hearing right now, Groupie Girl, is by Tony Joe White.
Groupie girl, you know you do your thing so fine. But groupie girl, you get old before your time.
Coming up, Bo Diddley's Missing Money, John Denver's Anti-Christian Conspiracy, and Jim Morrison's Paris Pilgrims. That's in a minute, when we return with Bands and Bands from Hearing Voices.
Like a joint, she was passed round by the groups that came into the town, and she no longer cared about her welfare. With her leather bags and Moskin shoes, she acts as if she's nothing to lose, and she no longer combs her pretty long hair. Oh, groupie girl, you know you do your thing so fine. Yes, you do. Groupie girl, you get old before your time.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
Your child.
Welcome back to Fans and Bands, Groupies, Gravediggers, and Rock and Roll Singers. I'm Ian Svenonius of the band Weird War. As the music industry constructed the groupie archetype, it also created the cult of the dead rock star, Brian Jones, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and Jim Morrison.
I went to Paris. I went to see the Lizard King's grave.
When Jim Morrison died, the circumstances, a bathtub in Paris, were so romantic it lent itself perfectly to a cult of remorse.
Got down on my knees and I tried to
The faithful still flock to his Paris grave today.
What I did while I was at the grave?
Yeah.
I just smoked a cigarette with Jim Morrison, lit two cigarettes and set one on the grave and smoked the other. Mm-hmm. Like lighting a candle in a church is just remembering Jim, how he lived, and then reflected upon myself. How do you want to die? How do you want to be remembered? Or do you want to be remembered at all? Do you want to have people come and visit your grave and light cigarettes and pour bottles of whiskey down there? Or do you want to be forgotten? My name is Michael Canfield. I'm from California. Living in the suburbs, it's kind of hard to live the adventurous life. You can't exactly touch death's thigh. But I do what I can, you know. Don't use drugs anymore. Don't smoke too much. Don't drink too much. Ride my motorcycle as fast as I can, in between as many cars as I can. That's what I do now. That's how I tease death, I guess.
Michelle Campbell.
Hey, and where do you live?
Paris. And Père Lachaise, I think, is the most beautiful cemetery in the world. People come from all over the world as a rite of passage, as an act of freedom. They want to be close to him, to touch him somehow. They leave things at the grave. They leave poems. They leave souvenirs, photographs of themselves. They take dirt away. They bring dirt from where they're from. It gets to be really quite primal. You know, they come and they pour wine on the ground. And here, Jim, here's a sip for you. I saw one girl, she brought a black rose all the way from America to lay on the grave. I mean, a lot of it's very sweet what they do. You know, they bring something precious to them and leave it for Morrison because they're thanking him for what he's done for them. Some people, they listen to the music every day and it gets them through. It's getting them through their youth. One time I found an Italian soldier had gotten some sort of sick leave for depression from the Italian army and come and left the doctor's form on the grave. This is where he'd come for his sick leave to the grave of Jim Morrison.
1-4 Cav, 1st Infantry Division. This guy?
236 Medical Company.
Army.
We're in the Army, yeah.
And we'd just go out in the field and train. We'd practice war. We'd practice what we would do if we invaded a country, you know. Practice blowing stuff up and all that kind of stuff, you know. This guy's a medevac guy, so he practices bringing wounded guys out of the battle.
No, I'm Dave Snyderman. This is Jay.
Jason Treadway.
And Zach Treadway.
These are brothers.
We go try to play some music at Jim's grave, and well, they got all these security guards there trying to throw us out.
Trying to play some guitar.
We're on a mission for
you know
Germany.
What? I fell down on my face and I kissed his grave, and people were like, "What are you doing?" And you know what? There's something about the soil and the moss that grows off a dead man's grave that moved your soul that means more than anything else in life, man.
Yes.
Okay, and they've been talking about moving Jim's grave, right? Talking about moving his grave out of here because he's not a French person, right? Good. Let's move it to America because nobody will stop anybody from partying in America on a dead man's grave.
Well, the elder.
Oh, we got some great
tribe. Shut up! Back when the world was young and light shined in their eyes.
I'm Hermine Felix. I'm from the middle of Holland. I'm here every year to celebrate the death of Jim. It's strange to celebrate the death, but Jim wasn't afraid of dying. He believed in so many things, but he lived in America. That was the wrong country to believe in things. when we see Americans on television and you see them shouting and always laughing so terrible loud and the clothes they wear, the things they say, I don't know the exact word. Hypocrite, is that an
hypocrite?
Yeah, that's the right word.
And what do you do in Holland?
I'm a teacher, grammar school. You didn't expect it, isn't it? But with Jim, you could always expect the unexpected. In Holland, everything is possible. I can do what I want. Not in the town I live, because there are so many children, so many parents who knows me. So, and you're the teacher, so you have to behave there. But here, I can wear what I want. I can drink what I want. I can say what I want.
Can I ask you how old you are? How old you are right now?
That's a secret, you know.
I know.
You can find out I'm the same age as Pamela's friend. Sometimes you think, am I too old for this or so? Then I say, I'm from Jim's age. I'm as old as his girlfriend. Because of that reason, I'm never too old to come here.
Do you think of yourself as Jim's girlfriend?
No, but it had been a possibility to meet him. I love to. With everything.
Yeah.
If he did want me, I want him. There's no problem. The rain is coming. You see?
Yeah.
Pow!
Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. Oh, look at this crucifix, you know?
We're in the tomb of, what's it say here? Catherine Marie Pro. Died in 1816. Look at this.
Ah, at the
died
age of
Christmas Eve.
Yeah, Christmas Eve.
72 years old in 1816. That's who's in here. This is kind of weird. Sitting in this.
Very weird.
Talking
yeah.
to Jim Morrison.
Who is dead in a tomb.
My name is Niklas Öhman. Göteborg, that's Gothenburg in Sweden. I have a certain resemblance like Jim Morrison. Sometimes when I'm dressed up in this outfit, leather pants and boots and white shirt, you know, I almost become like Jim, you know. Nice effect. I try to drink. I try drugs, you know. It's dangerous. It's death. It's madness. He encouraged me to go into madness and explore madness and see what this was. The easiest and quickest way is to do it artificially, by taking acid. That's a shortcut to madness, you know. And I was lost. I was here in Paris. I was lost for days, you know. I couldn't eat a sandwich. I bit my fingers. And I thought I was eating a sandwich, but it was painful. I got very scared many times, but that didn't stop me. So I went back into madness again and again. And finally, I came out on the other side. But I didn't have the guts to remain in this. So I went back into ignorance. I got married. I started eating a lot, you know, trying to sedate myself, to numb my perception. And I did pretty well. But then I discovered I can't live like this. So now I'm almost back where I started.
How long are you going to keep doing
it? Keep doing what?
How long are you going to keep being Jim?
I don't know. Maybe I stop this evening. Who knows? Who can say what will happen even tonight? Maybe I'll enter a spaceship and go to Venus tonight. Who knows?
That's possible.
Maybe I'll be a superficial idiot until I'm 80, dressing up like Jim Morrison.
Well, you might enter a spaceship and go to Venus tonight, but what do you think you're probably going to do tonight?
Get drunk. That is almost certain, because I'm almost half drunk now. Before you slip into unconsciousness, I'd like to have another kiss, another
end of the night, end of the night.
My name's Derek Mullins. I'm 27 years old. I'm from Henderson, Kentucky. And as far as knowing why I came here. I was hoping to understand the reason why I've been listening to Jim and the Doors for 13 years now.
So you're 27, and this is the same age that he died at. So mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I don't know, because I was recently diagnosed with cancer, and coming here seemed to be the, you know, maybe this is the answer I've been looking for.
End of the night. End of the night.
People, they read Jim's lyrics, and maybe it turns them on to something else. Maybe it turns them on to a little bit of Arthur Rimbaud, or, you know, a little bit of Nietzsche. You know, that's all Jim was talking about. It was opening doors. You know, we need a bit of darkness. That's what makes us who we are, that the dark things, the bad, marriage and the 60% divorce rate in America. It's young people are being raised that, you know, marriage is supposed to be a honeymoon constantly, and that's not what it is. Love is dark, and it's about sacrifice, and older generations knew this, and they stuck it out. They didn't just move from one person to another like they do, you know, a package of underwear or another car, you know.
So you married?
I was. Yeah. Within 3 months, I went through a divorce. I was going through a lawsuit and found out about the cancer. So it was the whole thing about me coming here. This was originally going to be a trip for me and my wife. And, of course, that didn't work out. So I thought to myself, I said, look, just go. That's what, you know, it's the spirit of, you know, Jim in a way. He went with it. Go, you know, go hard as you can. But, you know, Jim, he never took a break, though. He kept going until it finally took him out.
Merci, bravo.
Sixties, petite baby doll. Comme tu dansais bien le rock and roll. Ex-fan des sixties, où sont tes années folles? Que sont devenues toutes tes idoles? Où est l'ombre des shadows? Birds, the doors, these animals, the moon, the blues. Séparé, McCartney, George Harrison, et Ringo Starr, et John Lennon. Ex-femme de 60s, petite baby doll. Comme tu dansais bien le rock and roll. Ex-femme de 60s, où sont tes années folles? Que sont devenues toutes tes idoles? Disparu Brian Jones, Jim Morrison, Eddie Cochran. Jimi Hendrix, Otis Redding, Janis Joplin, T-Rex, Elvis.
You are listening to Fans and Bands, Groupies, Gravediggers, and Rock and Roll Singers. And you heard Jim's Grave, recorded at Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris by Mark Newman of DocumentaryWorks.org and produced by Barrett Golding of Hearing Voices. This is Jane Birkin singing Ex-Fan de 60s.
Janis Joplin, T-Rex, Elvis.
Now, being a music fan isn't always easy. Rock and roll music is invested with such personal power by its devotees, it inevitably becomes problematic for competing institutions, such as religions, who resent its power over their congregation. Jeffrey Carpenter describes the battle for the hearts and minds of the pop music fan.
My name is Jeffrey Carpenter, and the most memorable song from childhood for me is Rocky Mountain High by John Denver.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year.
I think it was one of my first vinyl records. And that song in particular, I just love to play over and over and over again. In fact, my brother, he just got tired of listening to the song. And one day he just took the record and cracked it over his knee. My father was a youth minister. Every summer we would take a trip to Colorado to a camp called Frontier Ranch. Their mission was to sort of bring the news of the gospel to young people.
Turn in God's word tonight to Genesis chapter 2.
They would start out by having a music ministry where someone would get up with a guitar and lead songs. And John Denver figured heavily within the music since, you know, Colorado was his place.
He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key to every door.
So every night, all the kids would get together and sing songs, and then someone would get up and have a very simple sort of message. Well, this particular evening, whoever it was got up to speak, and it seemed like he was getting something off his chest. I remember there was this pained look on his face as he described this cult-like organization that was anti-Christian. And at the very end of telling us about these terrible people, he unveiled who was at the head of it. And that it was John Denver, who was chairman of the board.
Follow me where I go, what I do, who I know.
And they would no longer be singing John Denver songs. And everybody was like, what? I just remember looking at the album cover. This is so ridiculous. And he's so serene, and he's got such a big smile on his face, and he's the nicest guy in the world. And how could he be evil? But, I mean, they told me it was true, so I believed them, but it didn't make me stop loving his music.
The Colorado Rocky Mountain High.
I find it almost another universe and another life that I would even think that somebody is all evil or all good. It's only funny to me now.
Rocky Mountain High.
That piece by Ann Hepperman, Kara Oler, and Rick Moody is from their Weekend America series, Song and Memory. While we've talked about various expressions of rock and roll fans, what we've neglected is the creation of rock and roll itself.
I wrote a concerto that I do on the guitar now. It's called Bowles Concerto. Dun 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 dun.
Musicians are, of course, also typically tremendous music fans. Bo Diddley, one of rock and roll's premier architects, began not on guitar, but on violin.
I played until I broke this little finger, and that threw the violin out of reach for me. But I didn't see too many black dudes with a violin playing in the big orchestras and all that. I said, hey. I saw cats with guitars on the street corners. But one dude caught my fancy was John Lee Hooker. I heard him on the radio. I'm gonna shoot you right down. Boom, boom.
Boom, 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 boom. I'm gonna shoot you right down.
And I told my sister, if that cat can play, I know I can learn. I taught myself. I didn't have no amp. I had it hooked up to the back of my mother's big old radio that blew it up. Then I went to Sears and Roebuck and bought a Silvertone, a little ragged amplifier that I made the record with. I tried to make the guitar sound like it was talking. When I first started playing, I didn't know nothing about no fingering, and all I did was yeah. I had a little juke band. We used to use a paper bag for to get a drum sound. A ruffle up paper bag and just beat on it, and you could hear it really good. And we had a guy that used to dance. He put some sand on a board, and that was our drum system until I found Clifton James, my original drummer, the one that did boom, da boom, da boom, da boom, boom. That was basically an Indian chant. Just picture they danced around a daggone big fire with their spears. Boom, da boom, da boom, da boom, 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 da boom, boom, da boom, boom, da boom.
Told it to buy a baby diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine, he gonna take it to a private eye.
I got the maraca idea from calypso music because it gave me a sound of a big echo room that sounds like it's in you, in my guitar. That's a lot of bands covered my stuff, but where's the money? Where'd it go? It didn't come to me. We were in a very messed up situation between black and white. And at that time, the people that was controlling all the money, oh, I could picture giving $20 and he's happy. You know what I'm saying? Buy him a car. Buy him a Cadillac and he'll be fine. You know, that's all they need in the ghetto.
Now a man stepped out with a long cigar. Line, I can bake you a star. I said, "So what's in it, man? What's in it for me?" He says, "I play your guitar, son, and wait and see." Here I am.
What is after rap? What is coming after rap? I want to see. One of my grandsons came in the house. Beautiful kid. One that I raised. He come walking in the house with a CD. Said, "Grandpa, check this out." I listened. I said, "Where you get that mess from?" He said, "This is what's happening." I said, "No, no, 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 not in here. I just don't like the dirty lyrics." So he hit me with this. "Well, when you came about and you sang 'I'm a man,' what did people think about that?" I said, "Oh, they gave me some problems. Because we a nation of slow understanders. I might do a song with two meanings, but I don't say nothing. You dig? You can think what you wanna."
Now when I was a little boy, at the age of 5, I had something in my pocket. Keep a lot of folks alive. Now I'm a man.
So I feel great, man. I intend to go as long as I can, as long as Arthur don't get me.
We can have a lot of fun.
I'm talking about arthritis. Tell everybody you never get too old to rock and roll. Bo knows.
Man.
Bo Diddley comes to us from the radio series Musicians in Their Own Words, produced by David Shulman and supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Who do you love? There's some kids in Kansas City cursing one of the little bitty dudes, cursing and hollering and playing a dozen with each other, talking about each other's mama and anybody else in your family, your cat, your dog. And there was something else they were saying, but I couldn't understand it, but it was dirty. You know, and I said, no, I can't do it, but I like the melody. Well, I took the dirty words that they were using, cleaned them up, and said, who do you love? Then I walked 47 miles of barbed wire. I used a copper snake for a necktie. Who do you love?
I walk 47 miles of barbed wire. I use a cobra snake for a necktie. I got a brand new house on the roadside, made from rattlesnake hide. I got a brand new chimney made on top, made out of a human skull. Now come on, take a little walk with me, Arlene, and tell me who do you love? 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 Tombstone hand and a graveyard mind, just 22 and I don't mind dying. Who do you love? Who do you love? Oh, Diddleum had a farm. Well, that farm he had some women. Women here and women there. Women, women, women everywhere. One little girl lived on a hill. She rustled and tossed like Buffalo Bill. One day she decided she'd go for a ride with a pistol and a sword by her side. She rode right up to my front door, knocked and knocked till her fist got sore. When she turned and walked away, all I could hear my baby say,
you can hear more musicians in their own words at ownwords.org. Links to all the producers you heard in this hour are all at hearingvoices.com. There's also links to myself, Ian Svenonius, my books, and my own group, Weird War. This hour was produced by Ann Hepperman and Kara Oler, and we'll finish with the song Bo Diddley. Hey everybody, thanks for listening.
Saw my baby run across the field, hey, slipping and sliding like an automobile, hey, hollering my baby done stole away, hey, slipped off from it like a Cadillac, hey,
it's easy. And then you got to learn how to put that stuff in the right place to make it tasteable. And if you taste it and it tastes good, what happens? You eat all of it, right? Oh, there you go, baby.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.